Is there something anyone would like to ask or share? Yes, please.
And this thing of death and life started to not to be so separate, and getting hot when I sleep. And I thought to myself, what if I will stop doing out of the momentum? And this is connected to what you said about Tara, right?
Yeah.
And what if I like that idea, that even after I continue from this body, I can still be doing stuff.
Could you hear in the back? Yeah? Not all, but in the very back, could you hear? Yeah? Are you content with what you heard? No? Okay. Lying peacefully in meditation, the thought of death, the great rest, came, and wondering if this rest can be helpful for that rest. And you said so many beautiful things. A feeling of life and death not being so separate, and a wondering about, oh yes, and noticing in rest that the quality of thoughts that comes is different. And I don't think you directly said, actually, but you said, what if I could not act from any momentum? And so I think you're saying the thoughts that come from rest are not coming from a past momentum. Is that what you're... they have less of that. They're more new. And then also wondering, what if there could be that kind of doing after we die? Something like that. Is that covering everything? Thank you. And he said, I'm getting hot while I'm speaking. Yeah, this is what I also want to talk about today. But I'm still open for any... I think I saw another... Yes, please.
Like,
mostly in retreats, I can identify that there is any song playing, and usually it has something to do with my state of mind,
mm-hmm.
or some association I just had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with it. I'm just kind of curious if it's if I share this experience with other people.
Yeah. You had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And the other day you mentioned the subject of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to hear what you have to say more about it. I'll just share something about it. So yesterday morning I felt it was really challenging for me. Trying to get somewhere, let's say, and I really didn't find the way. And lately I reduced drinking coffee because it makes me restless, but also I realized that for me it used to be a way of control, like nothing works, so I'm going to use my secret weapon and drink coffee, and then everything is going to work out. Yesterday I had this thought, and then at some point I just gave up, and I was laying down and felt really good, fell asleep. I woke up and then I drank the coffee from a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt happy like a kid, like so happy to drink coffee now. And yeah, mostly I'm curious to hear what to say about control and letting go.
Mm-hmm. Could y'all hear? Could you hear? Yep, cool. Okay, so control I find is more appropriate when we're working like with machines. If we're driving a car, it's good to be in control, for example. And we've started to treat living things like that. So children, for example. And because it's more demanding to, I think that another option is like communication, conversation, not necessarily in words. And that's also something that I have in my notes for today. But if we think of being with a child, we want them to be safe. They want to explore. It's easier, like, to freak out and yell or grab them or keep them somewhere that they can't get close to the street instead of staying in the conversation. And then because we don't practice staying in the conversation, it feels even more demanding. Demanding, like it takes more. Dushan. Okay, what was it? Doljani? Tovani, like Tovana. For you. Managing the kitchen, Tovana is Tovani. Thank you for saying yes. If we come back to the question that I posed maybe the first evening or so or early on in the retreat, who has creativity or also who has rest? Also, but I said who has creativity. Productivity is another side. Who has creativity, and then what about productivity? We talked about productivity. Our fear about not being productive, our fear that if we're not productive, what? What? We don't even dare think about it. All right. Let's make that a we. So did anybody investigate who has creativity? Aviv was talking about in rest noticing a different quality of thoughts. That's that kind of thing. In what space does a different kind of thought come? And you said it feels new. So original, creative, fresh. Yes. Comes in stories. Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
The last meditation here, it was like in a movie with a dream and a story. And I imagined myself in the field. And so it started as imagination, and then it rolled by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I dissolved into the ground and I went to space.
Mm-hmm.
One with spaciousness in black as the womb.
Yeah.
With the stars. So for me, it was so creative.
Yeah. It's not very long to go from a field to a womb of outer space. Could you hear what she's saying? Yeah? Okay. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's important to hear an example, another example of how individual creativity is, how individual the path is. And if we would be busy trying to control, then we would say, oh, imagination, back to the breath. And sometimes that's needed, and sometimes it's not. And how do we get to know the feeling of the difference? Through practice. So you had the experience with the coffee, like, okay, I'm going to work with trying to control my wish for coffee, and it sounds like that was fruitful, like cutting it can be part of creativity. Cut the paper, or even painting on the paper is destroying the white. The white paper is no longer white. And then coming back to the coffee wasn't evil after all. But you came into maybe a more natural relationship to something, a subject that had momentum, that had the way Aviv was using the word, a momentum. Could say karma. Could say program.
I think creativity is also a change of perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And could, I create something that it's kind of, sometimes I'm amazed. It was in me and around me all the time. And
yeah.
I couldn't, and suddenly there is something which is a different connection, but there needs to be an availability to see. Rest.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you hear? Wow. Okay. Yes.
I think creativity has something to do with being in uncharted territory somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like being a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Great.
In a place.
Great.
It could be anywhere. It could be like
Or being in the same place and not referring to the old map.
Yeah, exactly.
And having a different perspective on the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think it has something to do with the quality of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Strange. It's a good thing. Not
yep.
Not strange. But maybe strange.
Yeah. Yeah. And being a stranger, we can be in the strangeness.
Yeah.
We're available to the strangeness rather than to our momentum. Our program. One more, Amnon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Is what for you?
Cerebral,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cool. Could you hear that? Cerebral. Yeah. Cool. Okay, in honor of that, I'll finally read the poem that I brought with me since the first day and didn't read. It's by Mary Oliver, and it's called At Blackwater Pond. And it's a poem that I've brought with me since probably about 1999. So, Elia, you probably heard it a few times. At Blackwater Pond, that's just the name of the pond, but I think it's cool that that's the name. Speaking of wombs and coffee and other nice, dark, yummy, dark things. At Blackwater Pond, the tossed waters have settled. Tossed is like, whew. The tossed waters have settled. After a night of rain, I dip my cupped hands. I drink a long time. It tastes like stone, leaves, fire. It falls cold into my body, waking the bones. I hear them whispering deep inside me. Oh, what is that beautiful thing that just happened? So if there was a title to the talk, it was, there are so many things that we don't need words for. So many things that don't need words. And it can be confusing, like on a retreat. The silence is important, but then because the silence is important, it takes up most of the time, then what's left other than silence is like the food and the talking. And it makes the talking seem more important than it is. At Blackwater Pond, the tossed waters have settled after a night of rain. I dip my cupped hands. I drink a long time. It tastes like stone, leaves, fire. It falls cold into my body, waking the bones. I hear them deep inside me whispering, oh, what is that beautiful thing that just happened? So I've been talking this week about noticing the interference in our what could be our just natural way, but then not interfering with the interference or doing that and noticing it doesn't help. But then what? And the metaphor and inspiration of living, what can we call instead of ecosystems? There must be words. Living areas. But not just the organisms living together in a forest or. Yeah. So living. homes, communities. It's not only what we consider creatures, though, is it? Unless we consider rocks, clouds, air. They are created. Maybe they're creatures. The way that living systems can find their way back into harmony without our needing to do so much, that mostly the doing is to stop hurting. Creation. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just trying to refer to a part of that whole thing. Like, if we leave that forest alone, if we leave Chernobyl alone, then it all comes back. There. Even if we're busy wrecking another place next door. I think that when I used the word recovery as another possible word for our path, and I was asking for the Hebrew words that might mean recovery, and someone, I think, used the word that you use for healing. And that word, healing, could sound like, ooh, we better not mix healing and dharma too much. Healing sounds a little, we don't want to think about it too much. But if we think about it, what it is, I don't know about the Hebrew word, but it implies that there's wholeness and that there's a coming back to wholeness. And if we think about a simple, I mean, probably this week, all of us have had some kind of little bump or scrape, even if you hardly noticed. But you hardly noticed because then the body took care of itself. So there are some times that healing doesn't happen, but so many times that it does. How many, you know, skin cells we've all shed. Don't think about that too much either. And how many have been born. So if you just think about a little scratch, and we don't do much, maybe clean it a little bit if it's open. Maybe cover it or maybe give it some fresh air. Who has healing? Like, that's like the creativity, like giving the just bare minimum decent conditions. And something that if we would try to do that in a controlling way, we would try to engineer that. The biochemistry of just a small scratch taking care of itself. I mean, it would be billions of dollars to create something like each one of those immune cells that came there, or even just a skin cell. We can't. So again, we already have superpowers. So in ourselves also, that's the path. That's what the path is the harder work is getting out of our way. The harder work is to stop hurting ourselves and others and to leave a little room for something that we can't engineer that is strange. So I gave some examples of some elements that might be good enough, decent enough conditions. And we talked about ground a lot a few days ago. And today we have a few people actually talking for me about space. And also, it doesn't have to be in the way that Karmit experienced ground becoming space, or inviting or including space. But just what we practice with ground, like feeling, coming to be able to feel a little bit the weight of the body. Sometimes. And feeling weight and gravity, sometimes after a while, have you noticed that there starts to come a another feeling of, could call it lightness or spaciousness. Maybe you feel a little bit bigger than your body, or a lot bigger than your body, or a lightness, a lifting up. If you're not sure you've experienced that, I'm pretty sure you have, but it's more subtle than what we're used to paying attention to. I don't know if y'all heard about the Chinese balloon incident over the United States a couple weeks ago. There was this balloon the size of a couple of buses that was going over the United States. And they didn't want to shoot it down in case it would fall on someone or someone's house or whatever. So as soon as it got across the whole country to the Atlantic Ocean, they shot it down with expensive things. And then they had to collect all the things out of the ocean. And because that had happened before, and no one had really paid attention, because it was like about 50,000 feet up, I think, like really, really high. But because the public came to know about it, it became a thing that they used the Air Force to shoot down this thing. And then, of course, there's so many things in the air over the United States. And now that people are looking, they changed the settings, like on the radar, to pick up all those things. And they found so many things. And they shot down a few of them. And so we're not about shooting it down, but letting our radar refine what we're interested in finding, what we're interested in discovering, what we're available for discovering. So ground sometimes is hard to find and hard to feel. And sometimes through ground, that lightness that can happen can be even harder to feel. Or maybe it's not harder to feel, but it's harder to recognize that we're feeling it, to remember that we're feeling it, because there's less of the one that would remember it. Does that make sense? The more subtle experiences, a couple things happen. We're not used to having it on the radar, so we haven't practiced that. Also, it's usually a bit of a secret to us. Like, we feel like, oh, that's not something that we would really talk about, because there's not really language for that. And so it would be like you and your child, kind of, you and your inner child. And so you wouldn't really, you forget that it even is your experience. And then the part that would remember as an experience, that a me experience that I had, is not so operative in that more lightness or more spaciousness. And so there's less equipment to like put it down into words, and words is what we think makes it real. So I want to just break the news now. The insights that matter more, and as you go along more and more, are not going to be coming around into nice sentences for you. The insights that really matter don't need to come around into a nice sentence. And as we go along, they're not going to. And we don't need them to anymore, also, as we go along. Yes.
I mean,
there can be a voice in a voice kind of way, or there can be a voice in a metaphorical way that's not in words at all.
Right.
But another kind of knowing.
Right. It's kind of vibes.
Yep. Vibes. So we could say feeling. Yeah, good vibes. So if we have, speaking of vibes, ground as part of our practice, and we leave room for space to be part of our practice, And then, so sometimes it might be, I'm tired, and I let my body be. Then when I know that I'm tired, I can feel that I'm tired, and I let my body be tired, and I let it be on the ground. Sometimes that's like, oh, so good. And even there, something in the letting go into the ground, of letting it be tired. If I'm not thinking, oh, but I'm not allowed to be tired because I got to be productive, but just, oh. Even already in that relief, there's something of lightness. We can also find ground from space. If you're more of a spacey person than a groundy person, from space, enjoying spaciousness, eventually you'll start to find, like, either through appreciation of, like, oh, in this spaciousness, the lovely light on the leaf. And a feeling that maybe we couldn't say how or why, but a feeling that it matters. Or a feeling that you care, even if you're also just enjoying spaciousness. So that's another exploration I'd like to offer you the chance to play with. If sometimes there's a bit of ground and a bit of space, or even playing with those words, the word spaciousness sometimes can just do it. Or looking at the sky is surprising. You might think, that's too kindergarten or too literal, but try it. Just a sec. I want to try to finish this sentence. To play with, then what happens? There's ground and space, and kind of let that be enough for a moment. Pause. And what happens? So maybe just play with that question for a while, and then there are a few other similar but more specific questions to play with if what happens is too broad. What happens? What vibes go on? What vibes feel interesting to you? What energies are going on? What chemistry is going on? What moves you? We could just say what moves first, take that for a week or a few weeks, and then what moves you when there's a bit of ground and a bit of space? What moves you? And this can be in the way that Amnon was talking about, where he feels wisdom by getting out of his head and just letting his body do it. That's your way, and other people have a different way. But sometimes, for a lot of us, a little bit of that, a touch of Amnon, can be really good. If you're feeling stuck in your body or in your head, just doing something can be good. We can end up approaching anything with this control thing. We can be like, right, ground, check, space, check. What happens? So then we can be interested in where does that impulse to, like, get it done, to feel like maybe I'm behind and I've got to catch up. Maybe it's wrong and I've got to, like, while covering up that it's wrong, try to get something right out there on the table at the same time. And even though control is such a strong push in most of us, as we've been trained and we practice that, not to be afraid of what you find is behind that push. It's actually very soft. The push for control. So we can play with ground and space when we notice control. Ground might be, what does it feel like in the body? Ground might be just getting real about how often this push for control is going on. And also, what are the situations where it goes on more seriously? And what are the situations where you have a bit of a break? And feeling how it feels in the body when you have some break, even if some people might feel like hardly ever, but still, like when there's a bit of a break, what's that like? And when it's on, what's that like in the body? And let your body, so to speak, it's not only your body, but in the body feeling what believing in control feels like and what having a break from that syndrome feels like. And let your body decide which one is more livable. We don't have to figure it out or have wordy conversations with the control freak. We can just feel, this sucks, this is great, a million times, because we're very stubborn. This sucks, this is great, this sucks, this is great. And then the fear of how great it is will come. Because it's bigger, and it's got more energy and more creativity, and it's not who we think we should be or who we are, all of that. What will they think? What will happen? But experientially, having space to feel this and feel that, and then giving space for a kind of like an impulse that's not programmed, that says yes. And then that again and again and again and again. Because society will still be trying to form us back into our box. And it's just cool how this non-aggressive fact that this is more alive and this is more dead, and feeling more alive feels good and feeling more dead doesn't feel good. Something in us, even when we've given up 100 times, can stay with the yes. Even when we're like, no, no. Sometimes exactly when we're like, no, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. Whatever that was, I didn't even know, but I'm not doing that. And we take another step. Yes. Can be, sorry? No, just, I couldn't hear the words. Is there something? Soft and great together, yes. Suck. Oh, suck and great, oh yeah, definitely. Something that sucks and is great at the same time, yes. She said sugar. Yeah. So there's a psychologist who works with trauma, especially racialized trauma. His name is Resma Menakem. He talks about clean pain. I think a helpful phrase, clean pain. The easy metaphor is yoga. You're stretching, it hurts, and it's so good. Unless you're, you know, hurting yourself with it. If it's just out of a love of aliveness, out of kindness, out of adventure, going a little beyond the comfort zone, literally, but not by trying to be perfect. That letting life, Also, there's clean pain. And so that would be like noticing all that anger in myself. Noticing all that loneliness in myself. Noticing all that shame in myself. And not making more of it than it is. Not making less of it than it is. Not believing in the freak out about it. It doesn't last forever. Just. And sometimes if that's still going on after a few breaths, is when we really need each other. Otherwise, it's impossible. There's another way, like the inverse, where it sucks and is great, which is how great it is, sucks. And it takes time to grow our capacity for that. The goodness, how quiet it can be, how undramatic it can be, how delicious it can be, how it can be possible to feel stillness and connection even when circumstances are not that way. Also, feeling that and not having company in that. Sucks. And of course, we have company somewhere on the planet, but that's not always good enough or as good as. Sometimes it's good enough and we wish it weren't, because it's like, that shouldn't be enough to remember my teacher or remember the spiritual people who've gone before thousands of years, or that one friend who's good enough even though she doesn't get all of me or whatever. So maybe this is where we could talk a bit more about connection. With ground and space, reality happens. And the nature of reality we talked about a couple of days ago, the liberating insight of Gautam Buddha, that things are born leaning together. So, and I explained what leaning was by leaning on the wall. But imagine that the wall is also leaning on me. And the puzzle of it, as we said the other day, was it makes sense if we're all leaning on each other that things would fall apart. It doesn't make sense that things would be born. And so it's entering a nonsense. Liberation. Leaving behind the need for the words to reconcile, for the accounts to add up. Okay, you didn't understand me and your question?
Reconcile.
Leishif. Yeah, well, that's good. When we don't have much ground and we don't have much space, and we have a kind of a small path with big dramas and a lot of control, we would naturally like want to keep checking, like, is it okay? Am I doing it okay? How's it going? Is this worth my time? Am I doing it right? And as we grow up and also get more comfortable, like with ground and space, we start to not break up with being here. Wait, I'm just halfway through the sentence. So we take up a little more space, and also we have less drama. And the dramas that are there, it's like, okay, I had hoped I was done with that, but okay. It's clean pain, it's good work, it's honorable work. We may start keeping track less, checking like, how are they doing, how am I doing, where am I on the map, how many more years till my enlightenment, how many more seconds till my enlightenment, how many more steps till my enlightenment. And gradually the whole machine of trying to make it make sense falls apart. the whole machine of trying to put something together, hold something together. The whole machine of trying to make a sensible equation is less interesting. Because the basics, so this whole week has been about the basics. The basics don't make sense. So we don't need to have the accounts make sense. That it doesn't need to be like, okay, I put in, I remember on retreat I would count how many hours were left, how many meditations were left, how many days were left. It was always confusing because I wasn't sure about the day zero thing. The first day is day zero. So always confusing. That's fine on a retreat. It reminds me of being on a long train ride in India and someone breaks out the peanuts. It's just a way to be together. They call it time pass, but it's a thing, a time pass. By we're together, cracking the peanuts. So you can do your time pass, like how much time has passed. But it's good to also feel in our lifetime, where we're keeping track, trying to make sure we get the best deal, how that feels in the body. If we want to do accounts, then we need to do accounts differently. We need to take into account the cost of our contraction, of our rejection of what is evident here that is weird. So the nature of reality, sometimes people give like as an easy word interconnectedness, but don't think that it's like an easy concept that would be important to get. But let it point us towards our experiences of how things come to be born leaning together. How much mutual influence there is. How much we can't go off and live in a cave. Because even if we did, we still need food. And if we're going to be growing the food, we're not going to be in the cave very much. So the play that happens, we could say, between ground and space or with ground and space, the nature of reality, leaves room for love, like it's kind of set up for love. It's set up that there could be ventilation, that we don't need to get everything from one person, for example, including this one, oneself, or even one species. It's set up for nourishment. And going kind of along into alignment with the setup. Agreeing with the nature of reality. Even if it sucks in a way sometimes. Because we would like a little control. We would like not to be so at the mercy of others. And it's kind of like instead of trying to get out, we go in and find that we can also be out. We can have some, no longer escape, but some freedom from the influence of others. Not by trying to get out of the deal. The deal is here we are together. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? And isn't that in contrast, I think, to how we imagine ourselves to be in the modern culture. I think we really imagine ourselves like a cartoon character who's on a solo journey somehow. And if we can understand that that's a lot in the culture, the Dalai Lama decades ago came to a meditation center in the States, and he expressed, it seemed like kind of, I heard the story, I wasn't there in person. It sounded like kind of expressing surprise, like he wasn't expecting to find a certain quality of the people he was meeting in the West, in that case in North America. He was puzzled. He wasn't used to it. And that was, he saw us, basically, as being more similar, now don't take this as an insult, but more similar to hungry ghosts than human beings. It's not our fault, but a hungry ghost in the Tibetan worldview is a being with a not very much chance to get much nourishment, but a big appetite, a lot of room for nourishment. It's not our fault. It is our culture. The culture of greed. A culture of not enough. The norm is not enoughness. That's what we would feel, okay, well, at least we all agree on that. And that sucks. And so the other day, the question of, about the good meditation, what is a good meditation? And of course, the real answer is good meditation is whatever meditation you're having right now, because it's good to do meditation and to bring it everywhere and to make time for it, to go deeply also in your everyday of your life, more important than brushing your teeth, and also on retreats from time to time. Sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. And I just want to put a little advertisement here that it's good that there are the 6-day and the 2-day, 3-day, 1-day, but that we call 6-day a long retreat, I would question. It's a little bit longer than 3 days. And that's not an insult or criticism, it's an invitation. Like, do those kind of long retreats, but keep open to the possibility of an even longer retreat. And don't worry about the finances now. I can't afford it. Like, just be open that might be possible. It might be possible and good sometime. So the other day about the good meditation. So any meditation is a good meditation. But part of what we were talking about the other day was how good it was for me to realize how much metta I needed to do, to immerse in. And now I'm giving you a framework that I feel like our culture requires that we basically, almost all of us, need somehow to find a way. You don't have to do that kind of metta that I led yesterday or that's on the board or that you read about, but some kind of metta just means friend or gentle. Some kind of practice of friend or gentle that eventually includes yourself as a basis. Like, go ahead with the other practices, but don't expect much. And give time to the gentle friend qualities, atmosphere. And we are kind of reinventing the wheel, so don't expect much progress. But it is worthwhile. Well, let me tell you how not depressing it is. Well, the part that wants to see progress tomorrow is probably not your friend and is not seeing the progress that is happening right now. So if we could weed out that or disbelieve that sense of lack, then we can recognize the progress that is ongoing, that is not talking in our language of fear and control. It's talking its own language of the nature of reality. So I would rather that the part that wants progress, wants to be given a bone, would rather get so little nourishment that it just... so that we can be left with what is actually going on. So it's so fruitful and so generous. And so little love does so much. I want to also talk about another practice and quality that I will be brief, but that is the nature of reality is set up for listening. And we can take this as literally and as metaphorically at in every direction you want to take it. It's another one of those things we kind of more or less know, we think we know what we're talking about when we say listening. Like resting, like healing. What is it? I don't know. But without knowing what it is, I can feel when I'm listening. I can feel when someone is listening, and I really appreciate the listening, by the way. And I love the chemistry that happens because of listening. So listening to your feeling of like, wait a second, give me something to go on here. Listening to that and hearing the strength of like, no, this, at least the way that I'm hearing this can't be the Dharma talk because it's not helping. And another part, it may be that old machine, that old momentum of it's never going to be enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. And so listening can really feel like what's wholesome in there. And can even from there act and say, give me something. We'll be looking at ourselves looking for progress and saying, oh, I still notice anger in my mind, so I haven't made any progress. And meanwhile, there might be so much more kindness coming around from behind in a way that I might not notice about myself, but maybe my friends do. Or my dog or whatever. I don't have a dog, but anyway. So listening to is a good practice. And also noticing what we're listening through. If we're listening through a rested mind, for example. And then just listening without listening to or through. And then we need to really kind of get in, embody, like what was that time that I really felt I was listening? Feel that in your body and let that be a guide for you for listening to and listening through, but also just listening. I think it's an all body experience and deeper layers of the mind than we could recognize currently. And I think that will encourage our shift from having energy to practice because we're suffering to having energy to practice because of wonder. That our lives can organize rather around wonder rather than around pain. We're not avoiding, excluding, or denying pain. But we're noticing what actually is helpful for pain. It's coming from a wider space that's not breaking up with here or with ground, if you like. And that slowly is getting used to the energies that go on when there is ground and space. It can be that quality of newness of thought. It can be the body just does go and dance. It can be that seemingly nothing is happening, but the listening in nothing is happening. Nothing is taking me to listen to, so I'm just left with just listening. It's gathered, open, there's freshness. There's the possibility of responsiveness, but there's not being forced to react. Thank you very much.